in our gospel reading, we heard some interesting things going on. Let me ask you this question. You don't need to put up your hand or respond, but I'll ask you a question anyway. So did you ever receive an invitation, perhaps when you were younger or a teenager, when you were more foolish? Maybe yesterday. Did you ever receive an invitation to a party or to a wedding and you said, I wonder who's going. If so-and-so is not going, I'm not going. Is he going? Is she going? Is Jane going? John going? Are the Israelis going? Are the Palestinians going? Are the Russians going? Are the Ukrainians going? So let's set this gospel story in a little bit of context for a moment. Might help us to understand it a little bit. This is Jesus still preaching in Jerusalem. This is the third parable that he tells about the Jewish religious hierarchy. But it seems like it could be about any hierarchy to a certain extent. So the king invites people to a wedding. And that wedding is going to be full of love and joy and partying, a place where there's love, where people are brought together. And nobody shows up. Nobody shows up. It's a concern. Nobody shows up. Seems a little bit hard to believe. I think of royal weddings in the past little while. Everybody wanted to show up, but nobody showed up. So then the king, as one does, destroys his own city in retaliation. That doesn't quite sound right. It sounds like this whole reading is a little bit over the top. It's a little bit bloody, isn't it? But perhaps Jesus is exaggerating to make a point. It's a story to illustrate an idea or a lesson. But anyway, let's move on. The king invites everybody, good and bad, to come to the wedding. And everybody who wasn't killed the first time shows up from that destroyed city. Another troublesome detail, the city was destroyed, but people came from it. But again, that makes me think that we perhaps don't need to dwell in the details, but think about the big picture. And so moving on from that, the only guest who isn't dressed up is singled out by the king. And that guest is cast out of the gathering into the outer darkness where there is wailing and gnashing of teeth. And where is that? Well, that's the definition of hell, isn't it? But being sent to hell for a fashion faux pas sounds like it's another interesting detail. Let's think about this for a moment, though. Who is that king character? He does seem a little bit tough on his people, doesn't he? The first five commentaries that I read on this passage have some thoughts about that. The first two said that it's obvious that the king in this story is God, even though that's not the image of God that we're used to. Although I must admit, the first reading from Exodus also showed a wrathful, although finally merciful, God. But then the next two commentaries said, it's obvious that the king is not God. God doesn't act like that. And then the fifth commentary said, it doesn't matter because it doesn't affect the message anyway. And then in a great boost to all preachers said that this isn't a great reading to preach on anyway. But I wonder, with that reading being out there, how do you not preach on that reading? I mean, I couldn't even say, let's talk about the psalm. Oh, because it's talking about God being wrathful in the first reading. Let's talk about the first reading. It's God being wrathful. But I think that the invitation that went out to the leading people of the city is similar to God and Jesus' invitation to leaders of our community, to leaders of countries, to leaders of nations. They're called to come and learn and to put into practice the message to love one another. That's what God's message is. That's what Jesus' message is. And to ignore strict legalisms in favor of compassion for people. But they ignored that invitation. I must say, going back 2,000 years, in the time immediately following Jesus' life, the religious authorities in Jerusalem didn't rally all of the people together and unify them in a marriage of their way of life to God's call to love everyone. That lack of unity eventually led to a war with the occupying Romans that resulted in the destruction of the religious hierarchy and of the city of Jerusalem, including most of the temple. Many Jewish people died. I think of the international situation today. We know that people in the Middle East sometimes have difficulty living together in unity. Muslim and Jewish and Christian people believe in the same God. The idea of loving your neighbor is a common precept between those faiths. But we've seen a recurring cycle of warfare over the last 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 or more years between various peoples in that region and elsewhere too. There's lots of they versus we. But lest we get too caught up in this week's escalation in the Middle East, we can also look at the situation between Russia and Ukraine. And there are, of course, various branches of the Orthodox Church sitting on either side. And I leave it to you to think of other conflicts, both present and past, they versus we. That's based in us, everybody, not accepting the invitation to love one another, to love our neighbors. Let's head back to the reading for a moment. The person who is cast into the outer darkness is not wearing the appropriate clothing for the wedding. It seems like that's a person who didn't come wholeheartedly to that party, to that wedding where love and unity are in place. They didn't come wholeheartedly, and therefore they couldn't do what they needed to do. Jesus says in this parable that the person is tied up hand and foot, but instead of literal ropes, it seems to me that this person is putting themselves in a bad place, tying themselves to the ways of the world that they couldn't just let go of, to perhaps conventional wisdom. And then that final phrase, many are called but few are chosen, that's launched many theological debates over the years. But in this instance, it feels that the person unchose themselves. They came in answer to a call, but didn't actually do what was needed. And so the big message for us is that by choosing to ignore the simple idea of loving our neighbors, of wholeheartedly treating them as we would like to be treated, we open ourselves to bad things happening. Is it God who does that? Is it God wants peace? Does God burn down or smash cities? Does God reject us? Does God cast us out into a bad place? Seems like we're the ones who do that. We ignore that commandment to love one another at our peril. God doesn't condemn us. We send ourselves down that path. We see a butterfly effect. You know, that's the effect where something small happens and it causes great ripples around the world. We see a butterfly effect where an action not driven by love, but by hate or greed or selfishness, often by a relatively small number of people, leads to the destruction of relationships, of individuals, of places, of cities, of civilization. We can see that around us. We can see live and in color the hell of war. We can see around us the hell of family conflict. We can see the hell of drug abuse, where people have been affected by circumstances around them and are trying to make bad things go away. We see the hell of crime, but that crime that might be driven by greed, but it also might be delivered by poverty because we didn't try to eradicate it. We need to encourage love, not hate. If we don't want to hear the wailing and gnashing of teeth of people condemned to places of despair and death. So I leave you with this question: what invitation to do good without asking who else is doing good? To join wholeheartedly in the wedding that bonds God with us and unites us to each other as well in mutual love is waiting for you. What invitation is waiting for you?